You are listening to Pastor Talk.
The last several years has been just really a pursuit of how do we do guest services well? And there are no lack of churches out there who do it really, really well. But I think sometimes the things that we assume are the things that we eventually either overlook or just lose altogether. And so if we are putting a focus on giving guests a great experience on the weekend, but we're not pointing them beyond that experience to anything else, in other words, specifically to a relationship with Jesus, to a deeper understanding of the gospel, then really all we've done is give them an experience.
Welcome to Pastor Talk, the podcast of Lifeway Pastors, giving you the tools and encouragement you need to shepherd your flock well. I'm your host, Marty Duren.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to Pastor Talk. This is Marty Duren with Lifeway Pastors. Thanks for listening. I hope you're having a great day and a great week. I am really happy to welcome Danny Franks to Pastor Talk today. Danny is the pastor of guest services, which I'm going to assume here most churches don't have a pastor of guest services, but I think Summit Church probably needs one. You guys are reaching a lot of people. Is it considered Raleigh, Durham, or just Raleigh, or just Durham?
Marty, I think it all depends on who you ask. If you ask the Durham people, it is only Durham. We're actually 11 campuses across the Triangle region of North Carolina. But we have hometown pride for sure whenever it comes to which town we're talking about.
That's awesome. Now, are you a homeboy? Are you from there?
No, I actually grew up just south of Nashville, not too far from you. So I'm a Tennessee kid from way, way back, but have been here in the area for the last 18 years.
Okay, cool. Well, why don't you tell, I don't want to disappoint you here, but you're not a household name. I know that.
That's absolutely.
Probably comes as a shock to you, just like I'm not. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself? Well, then we'll talk about your book.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, thank you for having me on the podcast. I definitely appreciate that. So I am a pastor of guest services at the Summit. I have been in on the staff for the last 15 years and have during that time had a few different hats that I've worn. But one of the common threads that has kind of come through that is really wanting to make sure that we are creating a very welcoming environment for our guests, making sure that it's not just everybody's job, but it is a specific role that specific people hold. Mm-hmm. And so that's been really kind of my love for the last several years of ministry, of figuring out just how we do that well and how we help people take steps closer to a relationship with Christ. And so I've been married for 25 years. My wife, Miriam, and I have four kids from 22 down to 7. So we are all always having some sort of identity crisis in our household. And most of the time, that's us. So
intramural squabbles.
Yes, exactly.
So your new book is called People Are the Mission, forward by some guy named J.D. Greer. I guess he's a somebody. I don't know who that guy is.
I have heard of him once or twice, yeah.
How churches can welcome guests without compromising the gospel. So why don't you give a little thumbnail? Why did you write this book? I mean, good grief.
Yeah. So like I said, the last several years has been just really a pursuit of how do we do guest services well? And there are no lack of churches out there who do it really, really well.
Sure.
But I think sometimes the things that we assume are the things that we eventually either overlook or mm-hmm. just lose altogether. Mm-hmm. And so if we are putting a focus on giving guests a great experience on the weekend, but we're not pointing them beyond that experience to anything else, in other words, specifically to a relationship with Jesus, to a deeper understanding of the gospel, then really all we've done is give them an experience. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's plenty of churches who do it really well, but there's also churches that don't really think about guests at all. Mm-hmm. They want to really kind of base everything that they do on traditions, and traditions don't necessarily have to mean something that our grandparents did decades ago, but traditions can just be something that we've become very used to and we're very comfortable with. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the way that they welcome their guests, it is more of a, it's just kind of an afterthought. They don't really think about it at all. They don't have a plan in place. And so this book was really, if those are the two ways of viewing it, either making guests the center of the weekend experience or guests just becoming an afterthought, this is really kind of a third way. Okay. And authors always have a third way, obviously, and they always believe their third way is the right way. But that was—
And your publisher hopes the third way is the right way.
Well, absolutely. And so we're, my goal in this is to make sure that in the process of welcoming people well, that we can both keep our guests as kind of a focus, but not the main focus. And we can make sure that we are pointing people to a deeper relationship with Jesus in the way that we welcome them.
I love the title of your first chapter, because I have long argued that the gospel is the only stumbling block people really ought to face, and we ought not stack up stumbling blocks on the way to the stumbling block.
Right.
Your chapter title is "The Gospel is Offensive. Nothing else should be." What is offensive? Describe offensive. As a guest arrives at a campus for the first time, describe offensive to that person.
Right. Well, let me start by explaining what I mean by the gospel's offensive, because for listeners of yours like myself who grew up in church, the fact that I just said the gospel's offensive is probably offensive.
Well, you just hurt my feelings.
That's exactly right. But, you know, when we talk about the gospel, what we are talking about is the truth that we are more wicked than we could ever possibly know. We are born with sin ingrained into our DNA, but we are more loved than we could ever possibly hope for. And for our very, very, very postmodern, even in some areas of our country, post-Christian society, that's not a popular message. Mm-hmm. That is not something that we are gaining a lot of fans when we talk about the gospel in that way. When we talk about the exclusivity of Christ, that can be a real stumbling block for some people. But what we recognize is there are some churches that have chosen to soften the offense of the gospel by, instead of calling things sin, they talk mm-hmm. about character flaws and turning over a new leaf or whatever. And what we've just realized is we have a unique opportunity every single weekend when people come into one of our gatherings to preach the gospel the way that the gospel is meant to be preached, and to recognize that the gospel is fully capable of standing on its own. But while it may be offensive to people, and by the way, 1 Corinthians 1:18 says that the word of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to those of us who are being saved, it is the power of God. So to those who haven't yet received the gospel, a lot of times the gospel just doesn't make sense. And the Bible warned us that that would be the case.
Hey, three pastors just wrote down your outline where you were talking. I just want you to know that.
Nice. That's great. That's great. That's totally fine. But also, you know, we recognize that even though the gospel itself may offend, it may cut deep, that the road to the gospel should never have anything that is a distraction, a stumbling block, a hurdle, whatever, to get them to the hearing of the gospel. So we want to make sure that parking is clear. We want to make sure signage is evident. We want to make sure our volunteers are nice. And we want to make sure just the basic things like bathrooms are clean and the lyrics on the screen in the worship center are spelled correctly, and that all of those things matter. And we say, well, they shouldn't be the main thing. Well, no, they should not be the main thing, but they also shouldn't distract people from the main thing. And so we want to make sure that we're taking care of the offenses that we can take care of, and letting the one thing that should be offensive stand on its own.
Well, in a sense, until you get them to the main thing, all those other things are the main thing. I mean, if they drive onto the campus and they hadn't got to the sermon yet and they're still in the parking lot's the main thing at that particular moment in time, so it can't be overlooked.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think so many times we just sort of assume the best about those things because, and the reason is because we're familiar with them. Mm-hmm. We know where the crack in the sidewalk is. We know that this particular door never gets unlocked, and so you don't even go and try to pull on that door to get into the building. But our guests don't know those things. And so we have what Chip and Dan Heath call the curse of knowledge, where because we know something, we assume that everybody coming behind us knows that thing. And so the argument of the book, the first half of the book anyway, is just to lay out a plan to help churches think through, not from the inside out, so starting with the sermon and working outward, but starting with the outside and working our way inward, because the sermon is not the first thing that our guests see or hear, but it is. It's the parking lot, it's the signage, it's all those things literally on the outside of the building.
So talk a little bit about how to put together a team. You want your people who, and I guess there's some debate maybe even where do you start with your first line of people to talk to a guest? Do you put somebody in the parking lot who's patrolling the first time visitor section?
Yeah.
Do you have somebody kind of greet them as they're coming across? Do you wait until they get to the building, but the person standing there makes it obvious where they're supposed to come? Is there a right or wrong, or is it kind of the culture of where the church is?
I think a lot of it has to do with the culture of the church. It has to do with your setting, with your part of the country, even with your town or city in the middle, in the middle of that part of the country. We want to make sure that we are providing enough very obvious cues and on ramps so that our guests will know we are here to help you when you choose for us to help you. You can really, in a lot of churches these days, even churches that are, 200 people or whatever, it's very possible to remain anonymous in churches these days.
Yeah.
And for a first-time guest, we don't ever want them to feel the pressure that we're going to put them on the spot.
Right.
But we want to make it so obvious that they are that we've thought through their arrival.
Yeah.
That anytime they want to be known, they can be known. So for us, one of the very practical things that we do is we do have a parking team. And so we will put a parking team volunteer at the very farthest part of the perimeter of a campus possible, so that when a guest is pulling onto our property and they see somebody standing out there with a goofy looking orange vest and a traffic wand in their hand, they will not ever explicitly think about it, but it puts a subliminal thought in their head that they've set this up for me. And so if there's somebody here to make sure that I have what I need, maybe there will be somebody further in that'll help me with what I need. And so then, it depends on the footprint of your church. You'll have a few people on the sidewalk. If you have a tent out front, like we do to welcome guests in, you'll have some of your best and brightest people there. You'll have folks at the doors. You'll have folks inside the lobby, people at the auditorium doors, people inside seating. All of that depends on really what your needs are as a church. But all of those are areas where you can easily place some people to help your guests find their way around.
How do you, I think a lot of pastors recognize this is a common problem. How do you keep your welcoming team or your guest services team from spending all morning talking to each other and catching up on the college football game? And you've got a truckload of guests are trying to make their way into the building and they're reliving the last touchdown from the night before.
Exactly.
How do you address that?
Yeah, breaking that huddle is one of those things that is really difficult. And sometimes I know in our context, some of the chiefs of sinners on making a huddle are staff members, of which I may be the chief of the chief of sinners.
Well, there's good news. You can still be saved.
That's exactly right. It's not like I spent all week with these people, but for some reason, I still want to talk with them on the weekend. I think a really practical, like bare bones practical tip, Marty, is just to make sure that our volunteers are standing shoulder to shoulder and not face to face, so that they're constantly looking out for other guests that are coming in. And, it's fine. I want our volunteers to have relationships with each other, to love being with each other. But at the same time, our first priority on the weekend should not be to the people that we already know.
Yeah.
If we're serving on a guest services team, our first priority should be serving our guests.
Yeah.
And so we encourage those friendships between volunteers, obviously, but also we ask that as soon as a guest walks up or somebody that they don't know walks up, that conversation with each other ends and the conversation with the guest begins.
Talk about the difference in the ability or skill set or whatever between the person who heads up a guest services ministry versus the person who serves on the guest services ministry. I'm sure there has to be a little bit of a skill set difference, and it might help some of our pastors to know what to look for.
Yeah, that is sometimes the $100,000 question.
I'll take it
in
cash.
We have found that that's exactly right. We have found that for somebody who leads, Yes, they do need to be a people person. I mean, even if they wouldn't be classically defined as an extrovert, sure, they do need to have a love for people. But at the same time, they have to be somebody that is highly organized, because to be able to keep track of volunteers, and to keep track of who's been trained and who hasn't, and to keep track of first-time guests that are coming in, to be able to follow up with them, that's a really crucial part of the job. And so you can be really, really good at loving people, but really, really bad at keeping up with people. Yeah. You know, we all know those people that are the life of the party, but they can't remember anybody's name. And that doesn't really make people feel, it doesn't always make them feel loved. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, as far as a volunteer goes, we've got plenty of volunteers on our teams that would define themselves as introverts. They don't have to be the one who is the center of attention, but in order to be able to have some really good, deep conversations with people that maybe they just met.
Yeah.
But we want to make sure that wherever they're serving, whether it's on the seating team or parking team or wherever, that we've really tried to define and dig in to figure out where are you serving out of your passion? Mm-hmm. What is it that makes you the most comfortable? Where are you living in your sweet spot? And we want to help encourage that.
That's awesome. Now, the book is divided into two sections, looking out and looking in. And the second section is the chapter called When the Older Brother Rears His Head. Why don't you go ahead and exposit that one for us?
That's right. Yeah. What I have found in working with other churches is that one of the biggest problems in developing a really healthy and robust guest services ethos is that sometimes when you are welcoming in outsiders, you are disrupting the status quo of the insiders. Mm-hmm. And I've never met a church yet, never been a part of a church yet, that we could not classify as a friendly church. But usually friendly means we're friendly to each other. Yeah. So there takes a lot of intentionality to do that. But the chapter, When the Older Brother Rears His Head, is obviously, it's a reference to Luke 15, where Jesus tells the parable of the prodigal son. And I've noticed over the last few years, you know, growing up, anytime you heard that sermon on the prodigal son, the bad guy in the story was always the prodigal son. He was the one who took his dad's inheritance, said, "I wish you were dad," went off to, you know, sow his wild oats and all of that. But I've noticed over the last few years, I feel like most of the prodigal son Luke 15 stories that I hear have more to do. It's more like a warning against being the older brother. Mm-hmm. Because as Ashley Woolridge, one of the pastors at Christ Church of the Valley out in Phoenix, I heard him say this in a sermon once. He said there were only two people in Luke 15 who were sad that the prodigal returned. And that was the older brother and the fattened calf. Those are the only two people who are upset about it. And so I think sometimes, you know, we tend to overlook the fact that there are older brothers that are in our congregation. And I know that there are older brothers in our congregation, because just about every morning when I look in my mirror, there's an older brother staring back at me, because I want what I want. I want what's comfortable. I want what's known. I want what I think that I deserve. And we realize the gospel just explodes that whenever, you know, whenever we think about the fact that we don't really deserve anything except outside of hell. And so we want to make sure that even as we are bringing outsiders in, that we are helping our insiders shepherd their own hearts well, to make sure that when people come in who aren't like them, don't think like them, don't talk like them, whatever, that we are helping them really think about the culture that they are creating by the things that they say or don't say, the people that they're reaching out to or refusing to reach out to. And we just really want to help our congregations not just put taking care of guests into the hands of the people who wear the official name tag, but that our entire congregation becomes a place where we are focused on the outsider, and we want to bring them in and take care of them.
That's awesome. The book is People Are the Mission: How Churches Can Welcome Guests Without Compromising the Gospel, by Danny Franks, who has been my guest today on Pastor Talk. Yeah, this I think I'm holding. Is this available now?
It is, depending on when the podcast airs. Okay. It should be, but March the 6th is the release date. So yeah, it will be available very soon, if not already.
Cool. If you're a pastor or a church leader, I would, I don't often encourage to pick up, but this is, I don't think I'm overstating to say that this is a theology of welcoming guests. It really seems like that. So I would encourage you to pick this up and maybe even get one for your guest services team and let them study through it. And this looks good, dude.
Well, thank you, Marty. I appreciate that. It's been, really that book is the story that our volunteers have written week after week after week for many, many years here. And so I am just standing on the shoulders of my heroes who are on the front lines here, welcoming people every single weekend. And so I'm when it comes to guests here at our church, I just happen to be the guy that's in charge of the team. I don't really do anything. You know how that goes sometimes.
Well, that's why you're the pastor.
But, yeah, that's right. That's right. So, I'm really excited for other churches. If we can help them avoid some of the roadblocks we've hit, we're glad to do that.
That's awesome. Thanks, Danny, for being with us. This is Marty Duren for Pastor Talk. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Lifeway Pastors. Also, you can follow me at Marty Duren. Danny, are you on Twitter?
I am. My Twitter handle is Let Me Be Franks, Franks with an S. So that's that. And then my blog and website is dfranks.com, the letter D, FRANKS.com.
Let Me Be Franks. No wonder your kids are always fighting with each other.
That's right.
All right. Until next time, this is Marty Dern for Pastor Talk.
Pastor Talk is the podcast of Lifeway Pastors and is hosted by Marty Dern. That's me. Join us each week as I interview pastors, authors, professors, and others to help your ministry as you seek to shepherd your flock well. Until next time, this is Marty Dern.